Welcome to NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas. I'm Adam Kimmelman here with Mike Morial.
I had my pumpkin spice latte and I am ready.
In the summer, you're getting pumpkin spice latte? That's almost breaking news in itself.
Summer, winter, it doesn't matter, Adam.
Oh,
whenever.
Geez. All right, so let's actually focus on things people want to talk about, not your coffee intake. We are 1 week from the 2019 NHL Draft in Vancouver. We've been covering this soup to nuts since July. We've got all of our stories on NHL.com, NHL.com/draft. You can also go back and listen to some of the great guests we've had on the last few podcasts.
Unbelievable guests. I mean, you can go back, listen to Goran Stub, the director of European scouting for Central. He was talking about players such as Kaapo Kakko, Philip Broberg, Victor Soderstrom from Sweden. Also, John Robleski was a great interview, Adam, right? And everything is still, you know, right there. I mean, if you would listen to these coaches, these scouts, everything is still relevant heading into the draft in a couple weeks. We're real excited about what we have coming forward, looking ahead with the NHL draft as well.
And we're going to be on hand at the 2019 NHL draft in Vancouver. We'll have all the perspective from the players, from the scouts, from the GMs. But to bring us a little bit of a different perspective, we have a guest today, Chris Peters from ESPN. He covers the draft for them. Formerly ran his own website, the United States of Hockey. Also worked for the National Team Development Program for a while. Chris, thanks for joining us on NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas.
Hey, it's good to be with you guys.
All right, so it seems pretty much a consensus that the top two picks are going to be Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko. But with number one, is the Devils going to have any real kind of difficult decision to make? From what you've seen, it's got to be Hughes, and there's really no question. Or has Kakko done anything that you think in their mind is going to force them to really have to think about this, what they're going to do at number one?
You know, I think the decision's a lot harder than it was, you know, several weeks ago even. I mean, really, it seemed like Jack kind of went wire to wire there, but all of a sudden, you know, really from the World Juniors on, it was building and building and building as Kakko just performed at such a high level over the course of that Liga season as well. It just kept building and building. You know, he played extremely well. And then the World Championship was kind of the culmination of it all, where he had a really great start to the tournament. Even though he wasn't scoring towards the end of the tournament, he was making an impact and obviously, you know, won a gold medal. So there's something to be said for a guy that's won as much as Kakko has already in his young career and how much better teams are with him than without him. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, I think that the we're looking down the line with these players. I think there's a good chance that Kakko is going to be a better rookie than Jack Hughes. I don't know that he's going to be better in the next couple of years. So that's something that I kind of take into account, because I just think that there's such a special element to Jack Hughes' skill, his speed, his competitiveness and kind of everything that kind of goes into it. And really, there's never been a player like him. I think that among the Americans, he's a different animal than, you know, Patrick Kane or Austin Matthews or, you know, it's just a different kind of level. I'm not saying he's going to necessarily be better than those guys. I'm just saying that he's a really unique talent.
So, Chris, before I get started, I just wanted to wish you a happy belated birthday. I believe you celebrated a birthday on June 10th. Is that correct?
That is correct.
You know, I was going to sing to you, but our producer, Bob Bender, said, nah, he's not on board.
So. That's a scary amount of knowledge. That's a scary amount of research.
I think that's good for all of us. Probably
so. But, Chris, you have an opportunity to tell Blackhawks general manager Stan Bowman who he should select with that number three pick in the 2019 draft. Who would you suggest?
You know, it's morphed over time, I'll tell you that much, because it's been real difficult. To me, you know, I know there's kind of temptation to look at a Bowen Byram there, but I just think that the forward class is too good. And you know, to me, it would come down between Alex Turcotte and Kirby Dach in terms of, you know, kind of what the Blackhawks could use, players that kind of fit within the way that they play. I think, you know, with Alex Turcotte, there's a little bit of an extra draw because of the local elements, but it's not just that. I think that, you know, had he played a full season this year, I think he would have been much stronger in the conversation for the number three. I think it's only been recently that he's kind of entered that conversation in a serious way. He came into the season that way, but then, you know, was injured and dealt with mono late in the season. And you know, I look at his World Under 18 championship, and I see a guy that really performed at an incredibly high level. He was second in points per game behind Jack Hughes, but only played 30 games this year. Is there an element of risk with a guy like that? Certainly. but I think he plays a good two-way game. He's going to be nearby at the University of Wisconsin, you know, getting developed by guys that the Blackhawks are very familiar with, and Tony Granato and Marco Siecki, you know, and their whole staff there. I think it's just kind of a good – everything kind of lines up. If you look at just kind of certain things that beyond just the talent and the player, and I think stylistically Turcotte to me is the best fit to play the modern NHL game. And that has been, it's been a long process of getting there, but I just think he's the guy that I would recommend if I were in that room, with, again, I mentioned Kirby Doc was kind of the guy who would be in that conversation as well over a Bowen Byram, who is an exceptional defenseman, but I just think the forwards are going to provide more value long-term.
Yeah. I really like Alex Turcotte myself, you know, so many tools in the toolbox for what he has to bring to a team. Who might be your favorite under the radar prospect you think could maybe be in the NHL in 3 to 5 years?
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys that kind of fit that bill. You know, where they're, you know, I don't know that everybody loves them, but I like them a lot. You know, I think one of the guys is actually Alex Vlasic from the NTDP, and you know, he did not have amazing offensive numbers. But he's, you know, a 6'6" defenseman, plays an NHL style game, very mobile at that size. You know, he skates extremely well. He has good vision. He doesn't have dynamic puck skills, but what he does have is an ability to make read plays, make a good pass, make good reads defensively and offensively. He's got a really good shot when he lets it go. I'd love to see him shoot more. I think that he's got some tools there. He hasn't really tapped into his full potential yet, and that's one of the reasons that I think that he's a guy that very well could you know, make a pretty steady jump in the next few years, where he develops at Boston University and has an opportunity to just kind of round out his game, bring more offensive skill to the table. And you know, he's a guy that could go in the first round, maybe second round. You know, it's kind of one of those guys that's up in the air. But when you have that size, that mobility, and just kind of the base of tools that he has, he's one of those guys that I believe could be a great value pick in the late first round or early second.
All right, so sticking with the NTTB guys, we've talked about the Jack Hughes and the Cole Caulfields and the Boldies and the Turcottes, on and on. 19 guys from this team are ranked in Central Scouting's final ranking, 17 skaters and both goalies. So down the roster, there's a lot of guys that could be NHL players. We talked about you talked about Alex Vlasic. Who else is there maybe from that group that fans should really keep an eye on? Guys that could, you know, maybe they're a little bit in the weeds right now, but guys who could be legitimate contributing NHL guys a few years down the line.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you guys probably heard it a lot at the combine as well, and a lot of the NTDP players mentioned Patrick Moynihan as a guy that is, you know, kind of played throughout their lineup, was able to play kind of wherever they needed him to play. As you know, he could be in the top six, he could be, you know, a bottom six guy. He could play on the PK. Probably didn't get as much power play time as you know, he would have in another situation. But you know, he's going to Providence College. He's a kid that's going to get a good base of kind of he has a good base to build off of already. Defensively, very sound, but also sneaky skilled. He does have really good puck skills, and it's more subtle. It's not like, you know, he's going to dangle a guy at the blue line, although I have seen him do that before. But he kind of opens up ice. He makes plays. Very subtle puck skills, and it works for him. And I think that he's the kind of guy that you know they're going to like. A lot of teams are going to look at and like. You know, I think that there's more talent on the blue line as well. Drew Helleson is a guy that doesn't get a lot of love, but you know, he played on their top four this year. He's a big defenseman, very similar mold of Alex Vlasic, though he's not quite as tall. And he plays a physical game. I know a lot of teams that really liked him at the Five Nations in February, and kind of from then on, he was higher on, you know, starting to rise up the lists as a guy to keep an eye on, because he's got good mobility with that good size, and he's a tremendous athlete. So guys like that, you're going to, you know, potentially hear about. And then even below that, you know, there's a Dominic Fensori, who's a 5'7" defenseman. It's really hard to be a 5'7" defenseman in the NHL, I would say. I think most would agree. But he is one of the more dynamic skaters in this draft. He's got incredible skill. He put up really good points this season. He's also going to Boston University. So he's one of those guys that it's a huge risk to draft a 5'7" defenseman. It's a risk to draft a 5'7" forward these days, but I think most would agree there's, you know, you need a different element of skill. But because of that skating, because of that skill level, he's a guy that I think should be drafted, even at that size, because he's probably going to be the kind of guy that you think about, you know, 3 or 4 years later, and you're signing him as an undrafted free agent, whereas you could have had him in your system all along.
All right, so sticking with defensemen for a minute, two guys that were really much talked about, the scouting combine and since then, Victor Soderstrom and Filip Broberg, the two Swedish defensemen. So the two very disparate skill sets, but who has the bigger, in your mind, long-term NHL upside between those two?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Soderstrom is probably a more complete player at this moment. But I think in terms of upside, I've got to go with Broberg. You know, he's big. He's probably one of the best skaters in this draft, forward or defenseman. His power and speed and mobility is outstanding. He's got the offensive capabilities. I know there's some questions about his overall hockey sense and ability to make plays. I think too many times, you know, he focuses on getting the puck up ice himself because he is so fast, and that's not necessarily going to work for him as much at the next level. I definitely like to see him make more plays on the rush, but that base of talent, the size, the skill level, he defends very well. He was, you know, the best defenseman at the under-18 World Championship in the spring. I just think that there's so much there for him to build off of. Whereas Soderstrom, you know, he's kind of average size. He's good hockey sense, decent skater. You know, he makes plays, played in the Swedish Hockey League this year as a 17-year-old, and that's not easy to do. And he was given quite a bit of responsibility. So, you know, they're very close on my personal board. They're really close together. But I just look at Broberg and I say, you know, if he maxes out, he's going to max out at a higher level and potentially be, you know, I don't know that, you know, a lot of people try to compare him to Victor Hedman. I don't think he's going to be that level of a defenseman. I mean, that's a pretty high ceiling. But I think that he's going to get to a pretty high level and be a top four defenseman in the NHL.
So, long before becoming the big-time writer you are at ESPN, Mr. Peters, you were a communications coordinator at USA Hockey from 2008 to 2010, handling all that public relations and marketing for the U17, U18 teams. Any favorite stories you can share, come up with during your time in Ann Arbor?
Let's see. That wouldn't get me in trouble. yeah, you know, really, the best thing that I got to do in my time there, you know, was to work with those teams that won championships, and the under-18, they won both years I was there, no big deal. But, you know, they basically, you know, the staffs that I got to work with, John Hines, Ron Ralston, John Robleski, who was an assistant coach, Chad Cassidy. I mean, those guys, I learned so much from them. And then the late Tim Taylor, who was really one of the first people that kind of pushed me towards kind of where I'm at now, where, you know, I always viewed myself as a hockey guy first and a writer or PR guy or whatever else second, just because, you know, the game's been in my life, you know, since I was born. So he was one of the ones that kind of just gave me the confidence to do what I do now, and spent a lot of time with me looking at players and, you know, talking about putting together junior teams. You know, he basically was USA Hockey's national scout before he passed away of cancer. And, you know, I just think that without that, without him in that, you know, I don't know that I would be where I am right now. And so anytime I think about my time at the National Team Development Program, the first person that comes to mind is Tim Taylor. And, you know, Mike, I know you knew him really well as well, and just a great human being and sorely missed, but I'm certainly thankful for the influence that he had on me.
You mentioned Coach John Robleski there, Chris. Does it surprise you how well he did with this 2001 birth year group at the NTDP, knowing what you knew back then and how he was able to maintain the practices and do all the off-ice stuff and maintain control of that team? How did it surprise you at all?
Not at all. I mean, he is always, you know, he's young at heart, for one, and that helps when you're dealing with teenage kids. I think that he understands that these players, you know, he probably understands them better than most coaches would, because he's not terribly far removed. I mean, he's pretty much 20 years older than all of them. But that's, you know, that's not a humongous gap. And I think that he has a great vision for the way that the game should be played in terms of skill, speed, energy, The physicality is not something they shy away from, but he wants his players to make plays. And I think he takes more, it's not that it's completely hands off or anything. It's not just free reign for those players, but he gives them the latitude to make mistakes and to make plays. And I think, one of the things that stuck out to me after they didn't win the gold medal this year was how much he put on himself in terms of player usage and the power play wasn't clicking. And then he just, he kind of put it all on himself and thought, hey, if we would have gotten these guys more involved, maybe things would have been better. And also the way that he got those kids motivated to play for bronze. I thought that the message that he sent to them was echoed by all the players after they did win the bronze medal against Canada. And that was a really good Canadian team. It was certainly not a guarantee that they would win that game as good as that U.S. team was. But the heartbreak of, having all that hype that you're the best team that's ever been in the program and all these other things that have kind of come out in the past year, and then you don't win the gold medal, to have the response that they did in the bronze medal game, which was really led by Jack Hughes. I thought he took a lot of that responsibility on his own shoulders. That's a lasting memory of that team for me and a lasting memory of John Robleski's overall ability as a head coach. I think he's a rising star, and I wouldn't be shocked to see, NHL teams starting to sniff around and say, hey, we like the work that you did with those young guys. We got a lot of young guys. Maybe you should help ours. So I think that's kind of where he's at. And a very good coach, a good guy, and a new dad, too. So he's got all kinds of things going well for him right now.
All right, last one from me, Chris. A little bit of news broke last week. Peyton Krebs from Kootenay had surgery for a partial tear of his Achilles tendon. I think he had the surgery on June 7th. How will that – do you see any teams that wherever they had Krebs in their top 10, top 15, will this surgery and the subsequent recovery affect their opinion of him at all? Would a team maybe pass on him because they think there's going to be, a long-term or a long-lasting effect from the surgery, from the injury?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Something I've been thinking a lot about, just kind of since that news came out. And what I think is it's less about Krebs and more about the thin margin between players in the range similar to him. We talk about a lot about like basically 3 to 12. There's not a ton of a gap between those guys, at least not for me. And that's certainly I include Krebs in that group because I think he's an exceptional player, amazing hockey sense, great compete level, a great character. He checks off a lot of boxes in both the skill and character department. So that's all good for him. But I do think that a team is going to have to weigh that with, their knowledge of the injury, their knowledge of what they're going to need to do to get him back on track. I think, teams are going to probably talk a lot with their medical personnel and say, what kind of timeline are we looking at? Is this going to affect him long term? Once they have satisfactory answers on that front, I think that they wouldn't downgrade him significantly, but if it's really close between him and another player and that player's healthy, I think, you kind of weigh the risk and probably take the healthy player. So if he's going to drop, I don't think it's going to be significantly. I still think he's a lottery pick. I still think there's going to be a team that wants him in that range, but there's no doubt that it plays some role in the decision process because it's a new piece of information at a very late stage when you've kind of already made a lot of your plans, but you at least have to consider it. So I would not be surprised to see, some teams adjust accordingly. But that's less to do with him as a player and the injury and more to do with how close it is between those players or among those players in that range of the draft.
All right, very good. Thank you, Chris Peters from ESPN, for joining us on NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Chris.
Mike, let's talk about the Peyton Krebs stuff. Chris touched on it a little bit. An Achilles injury, it's a serious thing. We've had him top 10, top 15 in our mock draft. I had him at number 12 to the Minnesota Wild. You had him at number 11 to the Philadelphia Flyers. Does the injury and the subsequent surgery and the recovery time, however long it takes, does that affect him? Do you think? We heard Chris's opinion. What do you think?
I don't think it's going to affect as much as maybe some might think, Adam. I do feel as though Krebs has already established himself to the scouts and possibly many GMs in that lottery range, that top 15 range. We've seen this before. Alex Galchenyuk in 2012, he had knee surgery. So Galchenyuk was on the radar of every team during that draft. I think Peyton Krebs is going to be on a lot of draft boards relatively high. I could see him going in that 9 to maybe 15, 16 range. I don't think this injury will have any effect. And we did have a story on NHL.com, Adam. I know you got a hold of his agent there, and he said in maybe a week's time we'll find out exactly the extent of the injury and how long he will be out. But for the most part, I think he will recover. He should be able, or we think he should be able to, you know, get to training camp, wherever that might be, in September or October, and then play a majority of the season. And let's face it, he wasn't going to play in the NHL next season anyway. So maybe, you know, you hate to say it, but maybe for this injury to happen now, it might have been the best thing.
Well, sure, and it's one thing. And if you have this injury at 18, at 17 or 18, it's a lot easier to recover and come back. And you're right, he wasn't going to play in the NHL this season, next season. And if he had any thoughts of that, this injury kind of takes that all away, because he's going to have no workout time, no time to get bigger, stronger in his upper body where he needs it, you know, no time to work on his skating. He's just going to be in full recovery mode. I think teams are going to want to see the x-rays, the MRIs, to talk to the surgeon, just to find out all the details on how it happened. I don't think it's going to change. You're right. He's going to be in that 9 to 15 range. Maybe instead of going 9, maybe it's closer to 15. But I don't know. I wouldn't consider that quote-unquote dropping. It's not like he's going from 4 to now he's going to be 44 or 104 just because he has this injury and he had the surgery. I think he's going to go in the same place he went. I think teams are just going to want to know. They're going to need a little bit more information, because obviously it's happened after the combine. They had all their medical plans. They had, you know, what his medical testing was at that point. They know what his fitness is when he's at his peak. But now they're going to have to see, what's his recovery time like? How much of a tear was it? Was it, you know, what percentage tear was it? So there's a lot that has to go into it, but I don't think it's going to affect him at all.
No, I don't think so either. And the other interesting thing that I thought Chris mentioned, and he gave us some great material there, was the number 3 pick, where he would, if he, you know, had an opportunity to give maybe Stan Bowman some advice, who he would take at number 3. And he did say Alex Turcotte of the National Team Development Program would be his suggestion. And I think Alex Turcotte is, you know, we had Alex Turcotte going number 3 in our mock drafts, Adam. He plays such an abrasive style, a jackknife, because he has so many different tools. Everyone likes the way he can play on the half wall. He can go down low dot lane. I mean, he can get in front of the net. He gets under people's, you know, the skin of the opposition, and he's very disciplined. And when he does that, he doesn't take a lot of unnecessary foolish penalties, but he has that mentality about him to get under the skin of the opposition, and I think that's what teams like about him.
Yeah, there's a little bit of Brad Marchand, but a lot more skill at age 18 than Marchand had at 18. You know, I'm not going to compare him. You know, one's a 100-point scorer in the Stanley Cup Final, the other's a 17, 18-year-old kid, but you can see sort of where the progression could go. But I think maybe he's got more top-end skill. And you're right. If I'm Chicago, you know, he's a local kid. He's got the skill. If he'd been healthy all season, I don't even know if this would be a debate. He might be locked into number 3. I talked to Mark Kelly, their director of scouting. He said there are 6 guys that they were considering for that spot at that time at the combine. I said, is there a chance the list could grow? And he said, yes. However, I think we can all sort of assume what 6 guys that he would potentially be considering: Kirby Dach, Dylan Cousins, Bowen Byram, Trevor Zegras, Turcotte absolutely would be in that mix. Maybe Vasily Podkolzin, the Russian player. Look, you want to go with a premium position. Center is a premium position. At that spot, Alex Turcotte probably is the best option. So to me, I think he's the pick. Like you said, we both have him at number 3 in our mock draft. So I think Turcotte's the guy for that spot.
Certainly a big draft for Chicago, but I think the New Jersey Devils, the New York Rangers also have big drafts coming up. Rangers, Devils, each with 6 picks in the opening 3 rounds of this draft. They have some big decisions to make, Adam. Let's face it, there could be some trades made here. The Devils have 3 picks in the second round. Those are valuable assets. They can maybe deal, get a player of established caliber, maybe get a prospect looking ahead. Or maybe they even consider moving up in the, you know, getting another pick in the first round to maybe get a player like a Cole Caulfield to maybe match with a Jack Hughes, who we all think is going to go number 1 in this draft. Interesting decisions for general manager Ray Shearer to consider at the draft.
I don't know if they'd be able to move up as high and get a Cole Caulfield, because, you know, we think he's going top 10. I don't envision a couple of extra second round picks and whatever, you know, player or prospect they want to go is going to get him up that high. But you look at the depth of this draft from 15 to 45. There's a lot of guys you could put in that spot. So the guy that you could have at 20 on your list could be number 50 on somebody else's list and vice versa. So if the Devils with 3 second-round picks, they see that guy they really like there at 20, 21, 22, maybe they start making some phone calls. And maybe that's where they get to a guy that they might for – and there's such that little narrow shredded difference separating these guys. That's a guy they say, all right, we have to have this guy. Here's an opportunity. Here's our ammunition. And 3 second-round picks is a lot of ammunition to have to move up and get that guy. I could definitely see that happening. Same with the Rangers. They've got all these extra picks. They have, if they want to move up, and there's a guy they really are locked in on at, you know, pick the position because it's so deep everywhere, they'll have a chance to move up into the lower third of that first round and have a real shot at getting a guy that they really like.
Yeah, and the Devils just recently signed Jesper Boqvist for their top forward prospect in their pipeline. I would imagine he's going to challenge for a forward position with the team next year. Ty Smith, the defenseman from Spokane, was named the Western Hockey League Defenseman of the Year after a sensational season in the WHL. He's going to challenge for a defensive spot with the Devils. So the Devils right now look pretty solid as far as where the direction they're heading and all these young players that are going to have an impact with that club. You add a Jack Hughes and you add 3 more valuable assets that they should acquire in the second round. That's going to be huge for the Devils. And the other team, one other team too, Adam, the Flyers. This is going to be a pretty big draft. First one for general manager Chuck Fletcher. I know that you're around the Flyers a lot. What do you think?
Well, like you said, you know, you've got with New Jersey young guys moving up, you got to fill in behind them. So in Philadelphia, their top defense prospects, Ivan Provorov, Travis Sanheim, Robert Hägg, Shane Gostisbehere, those guys are now established NHL players. So you got to backfill behind them. So I'm looking at number 11. You'd have to think they'd be looking at defensemen. I talked to Brent Flair. He's going to run the draft. It's his first draft running it for Philadelphia. What works and what he said was that there's a real good familiarity among the remaining amateur staff. They didn't make any moves. They haven't brought anybody new in. Brent's the only difference, but he's worked with a lot of their scouts in previous jobs. He knows them, just that scouting fraternity. It's a big circle, but it's a tight circle. Everybody knows everybody. So there's been real good communication. There's been real good, you know, similar philosophy on what they're looking for and what kind of player that Brent likes, that Chuck Fletcher likes, and that the Flyers established amateur scouting staff likes. To me, I think they go defenseman because they have all these real good young forwards. You look at Morgan Frost and Isaac Ratcliffe, German Rubsoff, who's playing in Lehigh Valley, who was a first-round pick a couple of years ago. He's got a shot to be a nice player if he can get healthy and stay healthy. But all their young defensemen are becoming established NHL players. So now you got to fill in behind them. I look at a guy like Moritz Seider, the German defenseman. I think he'd be an ideal find for them at number 11. Big, physical player, a lot of good offensive skill sets. He needs to fill out physically. He's 6'3". He's already at 200 pounds, a right shot. He's going to be able to either stay in Germany, continue to play against men. He could come over, play in the American League, could play junior hockey in the Canadian Hockey League. So I like what the opportunity they have there to add to their prospect pipeline.
And if you don't get Seider, there's a possibility maybe, you know, Philip Broberg or Victor Soderstrom. Both players are going to be in the Swedish Hockey League in the Elite League next season. So there are quite a few defensemen, and we've said this before, that there could be as many as 10 quality defensemen that are taken in the first round of this draft. I had the Flyers taking Peyton Krebs. Obviously, with the injury, maybe things change in my final mock. We will see leading up to the draft. But it's always interesting heading towards the draft, Adam. Could be some trades, maybe not. But we all know that there are going to be several top-notch blue-chip prospects being taken by these teams.
I like the little cliffhanger you threw in there. So you'll be able to see our final mock draft that's coming up, plus all the other great stories we have on the site now, coming in the pipeline as we get ready. We're a week out from the draft in Vancouver. I can't believe it's here already. You can follow all of that stuff on NHL.com, NHL.com/draft. But that's going to do it for this episode of NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas. You can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. You can also find us at NHL.com/podcasts. And a reminder to check out NHL Executive Suite, NHL Fantasy on Ice, and the great one-on-one. The NHL Podcast Network continues to be on the rise. For Mike Morial,
always a pleasure.
I'm Adam Kimmelman. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to rate and review. And until next week, NHL Draft Class presented by Adidas is dismissed.